Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. My guest today is Professor Mohammed Mirandi. Mohammed is, my goodness, he's been on many times. He's associate professor at the University of Tehran. He also chairs its North American Studies program. We've been focusing heavily on this program, as we should, on events in Ukraine, because it's a seminal issue of our time. The possibility of a global conflict certainly should attract the attention of everyone. But the Middle East is extremely important, and it's an issue that has been discussed on this program a good many times in the past, including with Mohammed. We've got the ongoing Iranian nuclear talks going on. Another round was just wrapped up, I believe. I think the next one will take place. It's a date in April. I forget the precise date, but there'll be another round in April with an aim of winding up with a permanent agreement. I believe the goal date is July 20 or thereabouts. Will it happen? Well, that's a question, an issue on my mind all the time. Another major issue in the Middle East, of course, is what I call, justifiably, Obama's war on Syria. It was planned long before Obama took office. He picked up the baton. He's entirely responsible for what's going on, and the suffering of the Syrian people is absolutely, what adjective can you find to describe how severe the suffering of these people are? Innocent civilians caught up in this geopolitical battle where Obama wants another imperial trophy. It goes on and on and on. Mohammed, welcome. We certainly want to focus on these issues and anything else on your mind. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure for me to have you anytime. Should we talk, I mentioned Iran first. Should we talk about the ongoing nuclear talks? What do you make of them? What chance do you think we'll have to get a permanent agreement in July?
Well, at this stage, I'm not very optimistic, and I think that's what most people are concluding. The United States has so far not shown any sign of accepting Iran's sovereign right as an independent state to have a peaceful nuclear program within the framework of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. And until that happens, the two sides can't come to a final agreement. And also, I think that in the United States, there is not the will to force Congress and the Senate to repeal laws that impose sanctions against Iran. And therefore, even if the United States says they can come to an agreement with Iran, there's no reason to believe that the Senate or the Congress will do what is necessary to do for that agreement to come into effect. So I think at the moment, while the United States is going to try to continue blaming Iran, we're going to have stalemate. I doubt that the talks will collapse because at the moment the United States is creating so many adversaries. It is becoming increasingly difficult for it to focus on Iran by supporting a coup in Ukraine and helping to overthrow an elected president. The United States has antagonized Russia, and it is continuing to antagonize Russia further as each day goes by. The United States is increasingly hostile towards China. It's spying on the Brazilian president, as we've discovered through the leaks. So it's becoming increasingly difficult, really, for the United States to impose further pressure on Iran, because the United States is simply, it has its hands full with all sorts of different conflicts that it, to a large degree, has manufactured itself.
Indeed, Mohammed, I agree with all of that, and included in our discussion, we might also say something about the ongoing Israeli-Palestinian peace talks that I consider dead on arrival, just the way previous rounds were. But so much going on, and I've said many times in my articles and on air that America makes more enemies than friends. Of course, as we know, Mohammed, America is the world's most powerful, influential military, economic, and political power. So no matter how good or bad it is, you can't ignore America or the way it throws its weight around, which it does all the time. This hideous General Assembly non-binding resolution that passed yesterday, 100 countries were pressured to claim that the legitimate, the perfectly legal referendum in Crimea has no legitimacy. Well, it certainly has legitimacy, but this is an example of how America throws its weight around. Of course, the EU countries came along easily. I think the rogue Arab states came along easily. I imagine Saudi Arabia, Jordan, countries like that. Israel, surprisingly, was absent from that vote, Mohammed. Astonishing. Israel did not cast a vote. Now, apparently, there's a diplomat strike going on in its embassies and consulates. I haven't really paid much attention to that. I guess it'll be resolved. But nobody showed up at the General Assembly to cast a vote. Well, I think somebody could have easily showed up. For some reason, Israel chose not to. Why it's not joining the bashing Russia chorus, I'm not sure. Maybe it wants business with Russia, wants to sell Russia arms or whatever. So maybe Israel doesn't want to get on the wrong side of Russia. I don't know. I haven't written about that, but I don't know. But I agree with you, and I think it was yesterday, or it might have been early this morning, I heard some comments by Wendy Sherman, is the lead U.S. Nuclear talk negotiator with Iran, and I heard some comments that she made. You have to listen very closely and read between the lines, Mohammed. And it struck me that what she was really saying, she mentioned things like Iran faces some very tough decisions ahead, language to that effect. It struck me what she was saying was that we're going to throw a lot of monkey wrenches into this going forward. And, you know, unless Iran agrees to surrender more of its legitimate rights, we're not going to go anywhere. But I agree with you that the Congress is in the pocket of the Israeli lobby, AIPAC, and the other 51 Zionist organizations. And they're militantly opposed to doing any kind of a deal with Iran. They want Iran isolated. They want Iran destroyed, you know that, but they want Iran isolated. They absolutely don't want a permanent agreement on the nuclear issue. And of course, Iran's program is peaceful. There is no evidence to say it isn't. If it isn't, Mohammed, it's very well hidden, because even U.S. intelligence, year after year, cannot find any evidence of a military component to Iran's nuclear program. So you have to ask, Mohammed, why the devil are these talks going on in the first place?
Well, that's a good question. I think that the talks really are taking place because the United States is finding it more difficult as time goes by to enforce sanctions against Iran or to keep the sanctions regime in place, to be more precise. More countries have incentives to ignore American sanctions as time goes by, and I think that to a large degree it is because of American behavior across the globe. During the previous General Assembly of the United Nations, one of the most, or perhaps the most critical speech against the United States was actually given by the Brazilian president rather than an Iranian president or anyone else. And that shows the degree of anger that exists in Latin America towards the behavior and the arrogance of the American government. Then now, of course, with what's happened in Ukraine and the depiction of Russia that we now see in the Western media and the American media especially, I think we're moving towards greater conflict between Russia and the United States. And that is, I think, going to even create a greater incentive for countries like Russia itself and China to ignore the sanctions even more in the future. So that makes it more difficult in the future for the United States to continue to impose itself upon Iran. Time is definitely not on the side of the United States. And I think the United States government is really its worst enemy, because, as you point out correctly, the United States is is a highly influential country. It's at the moment the final remaining superpower, of course, but because it carries a great deal of arrogance with it when it implements policy, its behavior towards other countries is from a position of arrogance, this strength is rapidly deteriorating. And so right now, for example, in the case of Iran, we see how the sanctions in Iran have actually hurt the United States and its negotiating position with regards to Russia, because for right now the Russians are in a much stronger position than the Europeans when we look at the sanctions regime, because the Russians have almost have a monopoly on European gas. Yet the reason why Russia has a monopoly is because the Europeans, under American pressure, were forced to create an embargo on Iran and prevent Iran from exporting gas to Europe. So the Europeans have and the Americans have created this Russian monopoly, and now they're stuck. So the Americans, through their irrational and utterly hostile and emotional behavior towards Iran over the past few years, has hurt its negotiating position with the Russians. On the other hand, American and European confrontation with Russia now hurts their negotiating position with Iran. And the Asian pivot towards China, too, creates anxiety among the Chinese about greater tensions in East Asia because of American policy. And that encourages China to move closer to Iran. So the United States, by constantly trying to beat down other nations, by constantly trying to impose its will upon others, by constantly trying to impose sanctions and to impose pain and suffering upon Russians and Iranians and others, basically it drives all these countries closer to one another. And it weakens the United States ultimately, because it is the only country in the world that is sanctioning each and every one of these countries.
Oh, indeed so, Mohammed, and there are people, distinguished analysts that go back a great many years that believe that American influence has really been waning for a long time, and its policy of continuous belligerence, I mean, post-World War II, of just one war after another, the major ones stand out, but there were many other proxy ones, smaller ones, that get very little attention. Most people don't know anything about them, and there are proxy wars going on now that get virtually no coverage in the Western media, at least. I mention them every now and then. But the big one for me, the ongoing conflict, is the one against Syria, and it really is a gross atrocity what's happened to the Syrian people. I've seen numbers on the number of Syrians displaced internally and externally, a country of 26 million or so people, and up to 9 million of them, my goodness, I mean a third of the country is either internally or externally displaced, and tens of thousands have been killed, and most of the fighters against the Assad government are not local Syrians. They're imported from other countries, extremists, whether Al-Qaeda or Al-Nusra or other extremist elements are brought in, aided certainly America. America's dirty hands are all over this, and Saudi money is involved. Obama is with King Abdullah in Saudi Arabia today, Mohammed. Two rogues getting together to discuss future joint belligerence against other countries they want regime change against. I guess that's what the thing is all about. Plus another big arms deal, I guess, with Saudi Arabia. You get so much money, you could buy all the arms America manufactures if it wanted to. But the Syrian conflict is just horrendous, and it shows no signs of ending. And I believe the peace talks collapsed. And I greatly fear that Obama's war against Syria last summer, after the Ghouta chemical weapons false flag committed by the so-called rebels, certainly not by the Assad government, I think Obama's war was postponed. It wasn't canceled. And my fear is there'll be another major false flag ahead as a pretext for launching the war he wanted then. That's my great fear. In other words, giving these so-called rebels an air force. Libya 2.0 is what I call it.
Well, I think it's getting a bit too late for that. The United States, you know, its influence is declining. Although it is interesting to see how the American media is completely uncritical of Obama's trip to Saudi Arabia. After all, Saudi Arabia is the country which extremist ideology comes from and which pays tens of billions of dollars to extremist organizations across the globe. And it's many of these organizations that are affiliated to Al-Qaeda and that carry out the atrocities that we see in Syria and elsewhere. But and of course, Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International, which are closely linked to corporate America and get their money and influence through mainstream American media and corporate America. And they too are very silent about the U.S. Saudi relationship. But I think one thing that is interesting is the fact that whenever I discuss Syria with my colleagues outside of Iran, the only argument that some have is that at the beginning of the conflict, the Syrian government was and its security forces had killed peaceful demonstrators, which I took for granted to be true. And although the Syrian government is, of course, not a democratic one, and it has enormous flaws, but I really was unquestioning about this particular aspect of the whole affair. True that after the coup took place in Egypt, on a single day, almost 1,000 people were killed by the coup leaders in an attack on a square that was under the control of the Muslim Brotherhood, and there was no protest in the mainstream media or in the West or any call for major sanctions. But what I found very interesting was the leak between the Estonian foreign minister and Ashton with regards to the fact that it seems that the opposition in Ukraine, in Kiev, was the source responsible for the killings in Kiev. The shootings against both the police and the demonstrators was carried out by the opposition itself, or at least elements within the opposition. And this reminds me of what happened early on in Syria, because the Syrian government at that time was claiming that there's a third force that's shooting both at the police and security agents and the army, as well as peaceful demonstrators. Back then, I tended myself to ignore this and to think about other elements. And I thought this was just an excuse. But with this very important leak, it seems that what the Syrian government was saying back then was probably true. So, we have to, while I think the whole Syria file, I mean, the United States government is and the Saudi and the Qatari governments and the European Union are responsible for the civil war, and they have the blood of over 100,000 people in Syria on their hands, and of course the misery of the millions of other Syrians, the responsibility lies at their doorstep. But I think that even part of the blame that could be directed at the Syrian government at the start of the conflict, even that may have more to do with the United States and its allies than we may have thought initially.
Oh, I think you really hit on a very, very important point, Mohammed. I think that's exactly what happened back in February, March 2011, where, a false flag. There are false flags come in all varieties and flavors. We know that. They can be big ones. They can be small ones. And they're always blamed on the victim. And I think that Syria was a victim of this. And there was a false flag, sniper attacks or whatever they were back then. Exactly what happened in Independence Square in Kiev, same kind of thing. I think it's very clear that the killings were conducted by right-wing fascist extremists, certainly not the so-called Berkut police force, I guess elite police force in Ukraine, and they had one bad day where they did commit some violence. I'm not certain if they shot anybody, but they were beating people on one day, and the president, Viktor Yanukovych, was so upset about that and so chastened that he ordered absolutely no more of this. So with all the weeks and with several months of conflict, one bad day, Ukrainian police had, but the other days, their restraint annoyed me, Mohammed, ignored me. I mean, people were getting beaten up on the streets, all kinds of violence going on, Molotov cocktails thrown at the police, at civilians, all kinds of other things going on, and the police showed such remarkable constraint. I compared it to what would go on in a city like Chicago, where I live. Where, I mean, the police would come out and start shooting people. And Chicago's history shows it, or any other city in America. But indeed, a fascist in Kiev did it, and I think whoever was put up to doing this did the same thing in Syria. And here we have a war now in its fourth year with no signs of ending, and still the weapons and the money keep flowing in, and the militants keep coming. It's a terrible situation. And of course, civilians suffer most. We have just a little time left, Mohammed. Can we shift to Israeli-Palestinian peace talks? Because I really see them going nowhere unless Mohammed Abbas, the Palestinian president, whose term expired in January 2009, by the way, he refuses to step down or call new elections, unless he surrenders and really gives Palestinians another Oslo, because he was one of the negotiators in Oslo that led up to the 1993 Accords. And I fear that something like that will happen. What is your view on that?
Well, just one thing before I respond to that is, I'd just like to point out that we have another false flag operation that was revealed in Turkey just a few days ago. And again, the Western media is almost completely silent about it over the last day or so. And that is the fact that Turkish intelligence and others in a secret meeting were discussing, and the foreign minister and the leaders of the army were discussing how to create a situation in Syria to give them an excuse to launch an attack on the country. And as a result, since it was leaked on YouTube, YouTube has been banned in Turkey for the last couple of days.
Oh, yes.
So, but with regards to Palestine, I think that, again, an interesting point is that the United States and the Europeans have no problem with Mahmoud Abbas being the head of the Palestinian Authority, even though he's not a legitimate president, as you pointed out, his term expired years ago. But when it comes, you know, democracy is good only if your side wins. And since Hamas won the elections in Palestine, you know, the Americans don't support democracy there, just like they support coups in Kiev and in Cairo. Because they don't like democratic outcomes, regardless of whether you like the results or not. That's a reality of U.S. foreign policy. But I don't think there's going to be any peace deal between Israel and the Palestinians, because the Israelis and Americans basically want apartheid to become official and to be accepted by the Palestinian people. And Americans also want to help Israelis carry out ethnic cleansing more easily in the country. And while Mahmoud Abbas and people within the Palestinian Authority who are utterly corrupt, many of them would like to accept American conditions because it would fill their own pockets. But the will of the Palestinian people simply will not allow them to take that step. So we will continue to have, the Israelis expel Palestinians from their homes in East Jerusalem. We'll continue to have apartheid imposed across Palestine. We'll continue to see Gaza under an embargo where the people cannot get a proper food to eat, with the support of the EU and the United States, of course. And this stalemate will continue, but since the balance of power in the region, I think, is shifting away from the United States. I mean, across the globe, it's shifting away from the United States. In the long run, I think the Israelis are going to have more difficulty containing the people of the region and the Palestinian people, because the mood across the globe is becoming more hostile towards Israel and its supporters. We see sanctions imposed in South Africa. We even see in the United States university scholars supporting an embargo on Israel because of its apartheid measures in Palestine. So things do not look good for Israel in the long term.
I agree. I absolutely agree. And I think bad policies, Mohammed, over time have a way of coming home to roost. Sometimes they take a very long time. I don't know that I'll live long enough to see Israel really taken down and really punished for the decades of crimes it's committed, let alone my own country. I mean, I just dream of accountability finally a surfacing where it's been so absent for so long, and such human suffering has been caused by these two countries alone. And the power of the Israeli lobby in America is really a very nefarious force led by AIPAC. AIPAC is the best known face of it, but there are 52 major Zionist organizations, and they're in lockstep 100% for Israel. And Mohammed, I remember a couple of times quoted the late Edward Said. Oh, do we miss him? If we only had him around now, quoting Edward Said saying, he's been gone 10 years ago last September, saying that the Israeli lobby could round up unanimity in the U.S. Senate for Israel in a matter of hours. In the House, it would be close to unanimity. A few outliers would go the other way, but not too many. But 100 senators, virtually on anything Israel wants, would be lined up. You know, if they said, let's go bomb Iran, you said, well, you know, they wouldn't automatically pass a resolution saying, let's bomb Iran. But I think you get the point. In lockstep with Israel, and it continues, and the Senate wants new sanctions imposed against Iran. They want new sanctions imposed against Russia. These are hideous things. They keep going on, Mohammed, and they go on without end. And at the same time, the more of this that goes on, I agree with you, the more influence America and Israel lose. But really, taking them completely the way they need to be is a very long-term process.
Yes, but I also think that AIPAC, while it is very powerful in the United States and continues to be very powerful, has shown the limits of its capabilities and power. When the United States tried to attack Syria by falsely attributing the chemical attacks to the Syrian government, although the rest of the world and those who check the facts know that the Syrian government did not have an incentive to carry out the attack, and that the extremists in the opposition had already carried out chemical attacks before. But in any case, when the United States wanted to launch an attack on Syria, the American public was so hostile towards the idea, and the American public is so sick and tired of making all these economic sacrifices for the sake of American hegemony abroad, that the political establishment was forced to bow to the will of the American people. And I think that as the United States continues to decline, and it will, I think this decline is increasing in pace, especially now with the confrontation with Russia, I think that this is going to create greater incentive for ordinary Americans to push back and to prevent the American government from pursuing such aggressive policies across the board, which are only leading to greater suffering outside of the United States, but also, in addition, to greater suffering inside the United States. The United States now has an enormous population which has difficulty feeding itself. People, you know, the United States is a country where a large segment of the ordinary people do not have, sometimes do not have enough food to eat, to sleep with a full stomach at night. So I don't see AIPAC having being able to have the sort of influence 10 years from now, 5 years from now, as much influence as it does today. And today I don't think it has the influence it had 5 years ago.
Well, Henry, we're just about out of time, and I certainly agree with you and hope what you say comes true. Indeed, horror is going on here. I'd love to see the dismissive U.S. public suddenly become aroused enough to repeat what they did back in the 1960s and early 1970s, where it took a long time, but it got the Vietnam War to be ended. A lot of things can happen when the public gets aroused, the real superpower. Mohammed, many, many thanks for coming on. I look forward to getting you back, and we'll continue. When you do come
back,
it gives my listeners a chance to get caught up on what's going on in the Middle East. Accurate reports, accurate analysis, and Mohammed, you're one of the best. Many, many thanks.
Thank you very much.
Join us on Sunday. We'll be on live. Make it a regular habit.